Good morning. As Sue talked about, this is Promotion Sunday. It's a big day for us, and as we do from time to time, we're going to take some time today to talk about family ministry and how integral it is to what we do and who we are at Cornerstone, and also to devote some time to praying for our kids together today. I asked Sue at the beginning here to share some of what she talked about in volunteer training last week. So I'm going to turn it over
there. Okay. This summer, David and I got to go to spend a week with my parents in Arkansas. And I went to college church with my parents, and which is the church I grew up going to. And as I was sitting there in the audience and singing songs that I'd grown up singing in beautiful four-part harmony, I looked around at the people that were there that I'd known my whole life. And there was Coach Barden, who taught me Bible when I was in high school. There was Mike and Sharon Plummer, the couple who had me over to their house countless times, and I can remember having all these conversations and them giving me dating advice. There was Miss Barry, who hosted our senior dinner. And there was just scores and scores of friends, parents, that I'd spent countless hours at their house eating their food, up to all kinds of shenanigans when they were sleeping, which I hope they still don't know about. But so many parents that had come to games and cheered me on and had spent time in my life. And as I was just in fellowship there at church, you know, they're coming up to me, and I'm thinking, I thought they were old back then. They're really old now. And as they're walking up to me, you know, the first thing is, now, which one are you? Because there's five kids in my family and four girls. So, you know, you're Donna? No. Carol? No. And then wanting to know about my life, you know, they would say, so where are you living? And do you have kids? And, you know, I get to show them on my phone pictures of my family. And they express how proud they are of me and things like that. And as I sat there singing and looking around at the people that I'd known all my life, just my eyes, I couldn't stop but crying, sitting there singing. And two overwhelming thoughts came to me. One was just what a life lived in faith and love looked like. Mm-hmm. You know, for most of these people, my parents' age, the end of their lives is in sight. And I don't know what that feels like. And I don't know how they think about it. But the way they are gives me a vision for what I want my own life to be like. Mm-hmm. And also I'm grateful to be able to go back there and see those lives of faith, because it's such a testimony to me where I am now. And I thought, I want this for my kids. And I think it gave me a vision for us here at Cornerstone. Because when I'm 80, which is coming up faster than I would like, but when I'm 80, I want my kids coming back here. I want Cornerstone to be here, because I want my kids to say, oh, there's the Dixons. Oh, there's the Kinseys. Oh, yeah, there's the Howards, or there's the Peelers. I want them to see a life lived in faith and love to the very end. And it gave me a greater desire and passion to see that we build well here at Cornerstone, and that we're building for the long run. And then the second overwhelming thought that I had is that you can't underestimate the impact that you can have on a child's life. I wouldn't have said that any of those people had a serious impact on me. You know, we asked that question, who really helped you in your faith? None of those people would have come to my mind. But as I sat there and looked at them, I knew that they had, because I experienced a collective environment of care and love from many people. And they had nurtured my faith. And because of that, even years that I did turn away from God, I knew I was going back because of what I had experienced as I was growing up at church. You know, it made me think, and I've heard this before, it made me think, God is writing a song in the lives of our children. And I may help write one verse, or I may help write one stanza. But I believe that every one of us that's here at Cornerstone can have an impact on our children's faith. Not our own, but the children that belong to all of us as a collective group. Thank you.
All right. You know, Sue's story reminds me of Hebrews chapter 11, which is the great faith hall of fame of Israel. And the Hebrew writer talks about Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Moses and the Israelites who passed through the Red Sea, the people who marched around Jericho before the walls fell. Even Rahab the prostitute gets a shout out there. And then he goes on and says, you know, and I don't even have time to talk about Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and the prophets and who through faith conquered kingdoms and administered justice and received what was promised. See, even the people that he says, I don't have time to talk about them, he talks about them a little bit. Because he can't resist, because they are the people who had something to do with the building of faith in Israel. And so he's writing to the Hebrews, these Christians from a Jewish background. And he says, and they needed to remember where they came from. And Sue, in remembering these people in our lives, some of them had big roles and some of them had little roles, but they all had roles. They are in Sue's Faith Hall of Fame. And as I've, over the years, as I've preached here, I've talked a lot about my parents, I've talked about my grandmother, but I didn't have time to talk about Miss Grace and Miss Callie, or Susie Boyd, or David Schoenhoff, or Paul Hicks. But these are people that when I think about in my life, they helped form faith in me. Miss Grace and Miss Callie were at the church I went to from when I was born until I was in fifth grade. And they were very old then. And they had taught my older brothers and sisters that were 15, 20 years older than me. These two elderly sisters who had, they never got married. They lived together about a block away from the building. And everybody knew Miss Grace and Miss Callie. And I remember going over to their house, and I can't remember one thing that they taught me. But I remember them, and I remember feeling loved, and I remember feeling secure. And I think those are some of the very earliest things that work to develop faith in us, is just learning that people can be trusted, that there are good people that will show up. And that's what all these people have done for Sue, and these people have done for me. Some are little roles and I can't remember exactly, but then as it got older, and I can tell you things that David Schoenhoff, the youth minister, when I was in high school, taught me. And I remember Paul Hicks, he was like a second father to me, and I could have conversations with him that I wasn't able to have with my first father. And those are big roles. But what these people have done for Sue, and what these people have done for me, is they've showed up consistently in our lives over time. And that makes all the difference in the world. Look over, turn over to Psalm chapter 78. Psalm 78, starting in verse 1. It says, O my people, hear my teaching. Listen to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter hidden things, things from of old, what we have heard and known, what our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our forefathers to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. You know, here the psalmist reminds Israel just how important it is to tell the next generation the glorious deeds and wonders of God. And then in verses 6 and 7, we find the purpose for passing on these stories. And it says, so that they will put their hope in God. They will put their trust in God and not forget his deeds, but keep his commands. You know, those of us who are parents likely feel no greater responsibility than to care for our children, but I don't believe we should think of this passage as merely a charge to parents. This psalm charges each generation as a whole to tell the next generation as a whole about God so that they would set their hope in God. And so as a community of believers, you know, parents, those of us who are parents, those of us who don't have children, singles, students, all of us together are given the charge to tell the next generation. Both the children in our households and also children in households all around this church building and households around the neighborhoods where we live. The whole next generation, we are charged with a task, this generation, of telling the next generation the glorious deeds of God so that they can put their hope and their trust in God. You know, this passing on of faith from one generation to another wasn't always a given in Israel's history. In fact, the next verse, that when I stopped reading in verse 7, which is very positive, then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. But then verse 8 says, they would not be like their forefathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, whose hearts were not loyal to God, whose spirits were not faithful to him. In Judges chapter 2, we read in the story of Israel, you know, God sent Moses to lead Israel out of slavery, and they came out of Egypt, and they inhabited the land of Canaan. But then Joshua took over from Moses, and then in the Bible we have, you know, there's Joshua, and the next book is Judges. And it tells about the period right after that Israel arrived in the land of Canaan. And in chapter 2 of Judges, verse 10, we find that after that first generation that settled in Canaan, it says the next generation that grew up did not know the Lord or the work that the Lord had done for Israel. In just one generation, they somehow lost connection with the story of who God is and the ways God had worked on their behalf. In one generation, they lost it. But I think this psalm is written to try to keep this kind of thing from happening again. So this charge that was passed on to this generation comes to us all these years later, and we're given the charge. And what a challenge it is. You know, raising children's risky business, right? You know, when you work with kids, you want to hear those three little words. I love you. Yes, those three words. But the words we really want to hear is, I guarantee it. We like guarantees, don't we? You know, you're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it. You know. Okay, so I'm going to shop at Men's Warehouse because he guarantees that I'm going to like the way I look. that would be fascinating because I've never liked the way I looked before, you know. So this guy's going to make it happen, and he guarantees it. You know, I think at times we view Bible passages like guarantees, like Proverbs 22:6. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. And it's a good verse, but I think we've read it like, do A, then B, then C, and then your child will turn out perfect. I guarantee it. But that's actually not the spirit of the book of Proverbs as a whole. It's written as an older, wise person talking to a child, giving them a direction, showing them the best way to live and the way to think about things. But it's not written as ironclad guarantees. Here's what I mean. Have you ever known parents who had a couple of kids and same parents, same DNA, same household, and the children made radically different life choices? Radically different, right? And so the people who know your one child go, oh, they're such awesome parents. And then the people who know the other child go, man, what kind of derelicts did you have? Obviously, you didn't even have parents, right? It was the same people. Proverbs 22, you know, we want to hear the three little words, I guarantee it. But really, the most appropriate three words when it comes to raising children is, let us pray. Or maybe, mercy, mercy, mercy. You know, we need God. We have so much that we need to teach our children. You know, things like how to treat each other, how to discern right from wrong, and especially as they grow up, how to make wise choices. But I believe the most important thing that we will teach our children is who God is. The most important thing that we will teach our children has to do with what comes into their mind when they hear the word God. Who is God? And we need God's help as we do this. You know, our children are certainly always going to have questions about God. You know, even the questions they have at a very young age can be challenging to answer. You know, with my kids, these questions, when they were young, seemed to surface, especially at bedtime. When you're trying to get them to go to sleep, and that's the last thing they want to do. You know, they can come up with all kinds of interesting questions. I remember questions like, Daddy, where is God? And I didn't want my kids to grow up thinking of God as being far, far, far away in heaven, wherever that is. I pictured heaven is like if you go out and you pass the moon and then you pass, you know, all the way out of our solar system and you keep going and going and going and going, eventually you'd get to heaven where God is, because God is far away. But the truth is, if you keep going as far as you could go, you're still going to be in our universe. You're not any closer to God, because God transcends our universe. And I wanted my kids to grow up knowing that God is right here, God is close, and God cares. I remember talking to Julia about this one time. She was about 4 or 5 years old, and I talked to her about God being close, and I was hugging her as we were praying, and I said, God is close. He's as close as I am right now. And she just laid there just kind of staring, like deep in thought. I was just looking at her little face, and she said, is that ceiling fan going to hit God? And I said, no, I think he's all right. He's safe. He's not gonna get hit. I like this one. You know, Daddy, how can God hear all the prayers of everybody all at once? And that one I usually just said, you know, honey, God doesn't really like it when kids ask a lot of questions. Think he's kind of mad at you right now. Yeah. No, I didn't say that. One thing, what I did do, one time we were having some family time, and I laid down on the living room floor, and I stretched out, and I told everybody to get around me, and I said, put your hands on me. And so I closed my eyes, and they put their hands on my arms and my legs, and I said, I can feel all of you. I said, over here, I think that's Mom, and I think that's Julia, and there's Alex, and there's Austin down there, and I can feel all of you at the same time, because my spirit, who I am, fills up my entire body. And I said, and God fills up this universe. God's spirit fills this universe the way I fill up my whole body. And so God can be aware of all of us at the same time because he fills up the universe the way we all fill up our bodies with our spirit. And of course, that breaks down at some point. It doesn't really answer all the questions, but it gives them something to chew on to give me time to think of the next answer, right? But the real challenge, of course, comes as they get older. Because sometimes the questions get more complex, but the real challenge comes when they stop asking questions. Because they're not asking questions anymore. They're not looking to us for information. Really, more what they're doing is they're looking at our lives to see what our faith means to us. That's the challenge. Because if the hope is that this generation as a whole, what we're going to do is tell the next generation the glorious deeds of God so that they will put their hope in him. The question is when that next generation looks back at our generation, do they see a God that is worthy of all their hopes? That's worthy of their dreams? Do they see a God that's reflected in our lives that we believe is worthy of our hope? That's what they're looking for, even if they can't put it into those words. That's what they're looking for. You know, Israel was called to remember and tell about the glorious ways that God was at work on their behalf. You know, we've looked at the generation in Judges 2 that lost connection with faith. And I think maybe one of the reasons that next generation lost connection with God and the story of God and God's work was that they weren't involved in God's work. See, the generation before was the ones who they had come out of Egypt and then they went into Canaan and they were taking possession. They were on mission. And because they were doing things that required faith, they had constant reminders of what faith was and what faith looked like, what it was to live out faith. They were trying to accomplish things that required faith. They were, in a sense, kind of putting God to the test. Saying, God, I'm going to step out on faith and I'm going to do something that I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I'm counting on you, God, and I need you to come through for me. And that generation stayed in touch with God and God's glorious deeds, and they settled in Canaan, and the generation after that wasn't on that kind of mission, got more complacent, detached from mission, detached from putting faith into action, and in one generation, they lost connection with God. So they were living in the land, they were enjoying the blessings of God's deeds. But maybe it didn't mean anything to them because it didn't touch them where they lived. They weren't participating in God's work. So God's work wasn't real for them anymore. So this challenge to be real, to be authentic, you know, comes to us. We can tell the next generation stories about God. For example, we can tell them stories about a God who loves all kinds of people. But if the only people we ever have in our homes are people just like us, same race, same socioeconomic background, same beliefs, same, if the people that we're around are always just the same as us, our children are not going to know what it would look like for there to be a God who loves all kinds of people if they don't see the people of faith loving all kinds of people. We can tell our children about a God who's concerned about the poor, concerned about meeting people's needs, but if they never see us being concerned about the poor, then the stories about God are just going to be old stories from an old book that doesn't have anything to do with their lives. And the connection will be broken. The charge before our generation today is to tell the next generation. But ultimately, though, the challenge involves living the story, not just telling it. While it's true and worth telling that God has worked, it's also true that God continues to work. God continues to redeem and restore and reconcile. And God invites us to join in that work. You know, when we accept that invitation, our message to the next generation becomes not just an old story from an old book, but a vital, continuing story that's powerful and relevant to the world in which our children live. And I'll say this, the way that they will hear that story from us is that if we intentionally choose to show up in their lives consistently over time. The way that the people that are in Sue's Hall of Fame of Faith showed up consistently in her life over time. And the way that Miss Grace and Miss Callie and Paul Hicks and David Schoenhoff showed up in my life over time. You know, I want us as a whole, as a community, to have the vision that we will be the next generation's Hall of Fame. We'll be the Hall of Fame of Faith for the next generation. So let's tell with our words and with our lives the glorious deeds of God, and tell it with the way that we show up in the children's lives. I've asked Marisela and Rebecca and Paul to lead us in prayer for our children. I'd like for them to come on up and we'll go Mari, then Rebecca, and then Paul. We'll close us out after that. The musicians can come up. We'll have one closing song, and then we'll be dismissed.